Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Dee Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer Guide to Keeping Chickens, and national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds Program. Today is Monday, July 8th, and I would like to thank all for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, ship poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tractor Supply.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
And you can find all the great Ware products here.
Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com. When you need an incubator, think Brensey, the incubation specialist. Brensey has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea. Technology you can trust.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Give me just a second, and let me get a sound check in the chat room now. We've had some issues the last 3 days since we've been back from our book tour, and let me get a sound check, and they're saying bad sound, very garbled, hard to understand. So let me go ahead and fix the problem. And a little choppy. Okay, so there will be dead air approximately for 60 to 90 seconds. We'll have dead air. Hopefully I can fix this problem, and when I come back, we will have some decent sounds. Let me try something here real quick. Okay, let me go ahead and try this. Testing 1, 2, 3. Testing 1, 2, 3, and see if this is a little bit better sound. Again, we've been doing the show for over 5 years, 825 episodes or so, and so we do have a backup after backup after backup, and I still have one backup. If this end up, this system ends up not being well, I was trying to connect via our Verizon. Well, I should have known better. There, that's one word there, Verizon. When I mentioned Verizon, that ought to tell you one reason why I wasn't connecting. Hate Verizon, by the way. So I was trying to use the Verizon Wi-Fi hotspot, and it just apparently doesn't have enough oomph to run everything, including the chat room and the switchboard and the live broadcast. So we've switched over to our not so great as well. I guess that's the perks you get from living in the country. Windstream, and try to do that. So a little bit better sound now. We'll see what happens. We'll see how long. It's been intermittent. In fact, I had a nice long 30-minute conversation with them earlier today, Windstream, and they had, of course, zero answers for me. It was pretty much customer no service. But, hey, you got to do what you got to do. So we're looking at different alternatives right now. So we'll just try this as long as we can, and I still have the good old backup if I need to. I've got one more way I can connect and broadcast. So we'll try this as long as we can. Christmas Chickies, Dallas Dave, if you'll kind of let me know throughout the show how sound is, then I would appreciate that. So thank you very much for tuning in. Wow, $75 a month, Christmas Chick, for decent internet. That is insane. When we were in the Atlanta area, we paid $19.95, and we had super fast DSL, super fast. Rarely ever had any problems. Of course, we moved down here to the country. We feel the positives outweigh the negatives, but one negative was at least we were thankful to have some DSL, though slower. It was almost three times the cost of Atlanta with slower service. It was absolutely horrible. So, but it's been working up until the last 30 days, and they're telling us, well, it's just high usage. And I try to explain to them, high usage, there's 504 people in my town, and I know for a fact half of them, and maybe more than half, don't even have internet service. So what do you mean high usage? It's crazy. So, and of course, it was customer silver. They have no answers for me. So, well, we don't have any upgrades in your area for the next year. I said, well, gee, thanks. So let me get a refund. Well, we can not give you a refund, but we can get you on a lower bandwidth. I said, I'm already complaining about the bandwidth I have. Now, why would I want to go to lower? So, just run around in a circle. It's absolutely insane. So, hey, Christmas Chick, East Dallas Dave, just let us know throughout the broadcast, and I can always have a backup to this, the good old Neanderthal cellular phone call-in to the switchboard, and everything will still work.
It's just not quite as the sound quality, but if I'm not getting it here, what difference does it make, right? So nonetheless, thank you very much for joining us, and appreciate it. Hope you had a wonderful 4th of July holiday, Independence Day, with your family and friends. We sure did. We had an excellent book tour with Tractor Supply. It was absolutely fun and fabulous. Met lots of great fans, sold tons of books, autographed a lot of books. We just had a really good time on the tour. It just flew by. And had a great time with the family. Man, we stopped at Anderson, South Carolina, Easley, South Carolina, Weaverville, North Carolina, Asheville, North Carolina, and Newton, North Carolina. And you just never know what to expect. I thought Newton would be probably one of our smaller events, but it ended up being the largest. It even beat out Asheville. It was standing room only. Approximately 40 people showed up, which was insane. They were constantly having to add more chairs and more bales of pine shavings for people to sit on to enjoy the workshop we provided. It was awesome. Met a lot of great fans. Got some gifts. Some people brought me some gifts out, which was absolutely awesome. And that's fine. And we just had a really good time meeting lots of folks. And we sold a great, great deal of books. So it was a super successful trip. Really looking forward to it. Mark another one into the record books. And we're looking at our next trip being sometime, I would guess, in September with Tractor Supply. Maybe reaching into October, but we're going to look at September or October for being our next Tractor Supply book tour, and then maybe one in November or the first part of December for another and our final fourth book tour this year with Tractor Supply. We're also, I sent them over emails today, looking at doing a Preparing Your Flock for Winter webinar through Tractor Supply this fall, hoping to do that as well. So very, very busy here with our Tractor Supply contract. And but the tour was just absolutely awesome. Really looking forward to it. I was looking over, and this doesn't even include iTunes, podcast.com, Zoom.com, or any of that. This is just through listens on blogtalkradio.com, and I was amazed. You know, every now and then shows will be real popular. You know, we'll get even more listeners than we already have. It's phenomenal. Just amazes me, makes my jaw drop. But the last Thursday, in fact, I'm going to go over there right now and get an update. Let me get over here into my accounts, and let me go over here to where it looks like, if the internet will work, where it'll list. But last time I checked last night, we were right at about 20,000 listens on last Thursday's show. That includes live listeners and archive listeners through Zoom.com, podcast.com, iTunes, about 20,000 listeners on last Thursday's show. And we welcome Richard Friedenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine. And so it was a great show. And actually, I saw him last week when we went through his hometown of Henderson, South Carolina. And got to have lunch with him. It was absolutely fabulous. Let's see, 21,694. 21,694 listens on that particular show. I remember we had one not too long ago with Dr. Bridget McRae when she did Washing a Chicken, and it's had about 15, just that one particular episode, 15,000 particular listens. So that was pretty cool. Gotta love it. Let me see, we're right here. Go back to the studio here and get that rev back up so I can bring on Peter Brown, the chicken doctor. He's going to be our guest today. And we've got great topics that he's going to be talking about today, some worms and canker. And so we'll be expecting him to call into the switchboard any minute now. And that'll be Peter Brown, also known as the chicken doctor. That'll be today's show. Gotta love it. And his episodes always get a tremendous amount of listeners as well. Because, again, he's one of our resident experts here at Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. And got to love it when he's on every Monday. And, of course, also Dr. Bridget McRae, PhD, poultry scientist and professor, comes on twice a month, the first and third Thursday. In fact, she'll be on this coming Thursday. So you want to make sure you mark your calendars to tune in this Thursday when we welcome another expert in her field, Dr. Bridget McRae, poultry scientist and professor. So teaches chicken all day long. Got to love it. So let me see what we've got here. There we go. But, yeah, we really had a wonderful time, wonderful 4th with the family, and we appreciate you joining us back here this Monday. Looking ahead at the week, today, of course, we got Peter Brown, the chicken doctor. Tomorrow, we welcome Ryan with the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy. He'll be joining us tomorrow on Wednesday. Let's see, it'll be the second Wednesday. It looks like it's open, so we may end up be talking about either preparedness with Prepper Penny or maybe essential oils with Tracy. That'll be this Wednesday. This coming Thursday, actually this coming Thursday, looks like it's the second Thursday of the month. So, goodness, where does time fly? So, actually, Richard Frudenberger will be joining us this Thursday, the 11th, and we have decided to eliminate our Friday show. So, this is now Monday through Thursday regarding the broadcast. We're going to go ahead and take three-day weekends, Friday shows. If we have an open show during Monday through Thursday, we may do a fun day, like a terrific Tuesday or a wacky Wednesday or a fun-filled Thursday, where we give away tons and tons of prizes from our sponsors. But we're going to eliminate actually our Friday broadcast. We've made that executive decision. So we'll be broadcasting Monday through Thursday. Also, we're updating our website as we speak. The current website, chickenwhisperer.com, is still up and running, but we have started on a new and improved website that'll probably take us maybe about 30 days to try to develop. And so we're working on that. Same address, chickenwhisperer.com. But we're transferring all of our emails over there. So email will go from chickenwhisperer.net to chickenwhisperer.com as well. And then we'll phase out chickenwhisperer.net altogether. So everything will be hosted on chickenwhisperer.com, including our email. So we've started working on that. It'll be primarily be the same. We don't do a lot with our website because we basically use it as a landing or a pad for people to get to our Facebook page and our Twitter page. So for media, for information about all the Chicken Whisperer Inc. events for media. So it'll still have our homepage. It'll still have basically our events page. It'll still have our sponsor page. We are looking, however, of adding an educational page, which, of course, you know me, will debunk a lot of the myths, rumors, and stereotypes, not just about keeping chickens, but also chicken care that you see out there on blogs and forums. It'll probably include the top 10 or 20 or 25 questions asked by new chicken keepers. Do I need a rooster to have eggs? Nope. Things like that. So we will have a basic informational page there that we see, and we get emailed and questions about that. How cold is too cold for chickens? And do I need a heater in my coop? Just those questions we get annually, year after year after year, based on the season. So it may include a very basic educational page as well on our Facebook, on our new website, again, chickenwhisperer.com. So we've started working on that over the holiday. And we're far from done, but we are making progress with it on a regular basis. So we look forward to that. Again, not too much. It won't include a blog. You know, I'm not a big fan of blogs. It's not going to include a forum. You know, I'm not include, but it will include an educational page where people can get some good information, and the answers may be derived from our resident experts, Peter Brown and Dr. Bridget McCray. So looking forward to that. Again, just a basic information educational page there. So we're really looking forward to launch that. That'll be a great launch with links to our Facebook page and our Twitter page, as well as trying to update working on the schedule a little bit more now. Summer's here. Most of all of our guests will stay the same. We do have some open spots available, so we're trying to fill those with some other guests. As well, you know, the essential oils have been a pretty popular show, and let me see what we got here, and doing that, let me get another sound check in the chat room, see what we got going on here. Do-it-yourself chicken coop page, yeah, that might be a good one too. Christmas chick. Okay, so we're still good there. Let me go ahead and try to get this done again here. It's not letting me update this, so let me try something. There we go. It's a sweet little time for me to update the switchboard. I'm afraid that Peter may be on hold, and it's just not showing me he's on hold, because it's not actually updating. So give me a second to try this. And if he is on, we will bring him directly on the air, and we'll get on to our educational topics today with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. There we go. I think it updated. At least it looks like it did. Maybe. Don't you love technology? Technology is, in fact, I stopped in Best Buy to inquire and get a little education about different devices. And I was asking a gentleman there, I said, I thought technology was supposed to make life more simple or simpler. And but you know, you got people carrying around a so-called smartphone that does all this stuff. Then they have I guess it's called a tablet or an iPad or something that they've got. And then, of course, they have to have a Nook or something like that to read on. And then, of course, they have a laptop. And then I guess many people don't have desktops anymore. But I was like, you know, don't you have one device that'll do it all? One device where I can get online, I can broadcast the show, I can make phone calls, receive phone calls, read a book, whatever. And it was amazing. I thought technology is supposed to make things simple. But now they've got 50 different gadgets. I guess, you know, people have to have the cell phone on their belt, and then the smartphone on their belt, and then they have the tablet in their pocket, and then they have a briefcase for their laptop that they carry around. I wish they just had one device that would do it all, including make calls. I was looking at maybe something the size of a tablet where I could, you know, not worry about cell phone or laptop or any of that and do everything from that. But tablets apparently don't have cell service. And then the biggest cell phone they make is, I think, called the Galaxy Note or something like that. And you still can't, and even if it runs off apparently Android, it will do video, and I don't know. But you can't use, what was it? You can't use, I think on that you cannot use Magic Jack, which we don't have, but I was looking at as far as having phone service if I wasn't. Anyway, it's all too technical. I thought these things were supposed to make life easier. So you never know. And then, of course, you get something, and 6 months later, there's something else. It's obsolete based on technology. So very, very interesting. All righty. Well, hey, it looks like Peter Brown has called in. Great topic for you today. So we'll head over to the switchboard and bring Peter on, if the switchboard will work. Again, I'm dealing here with very, 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 very slow everything. Okay, Peter, let me see if I can hear you, my friend. Okay, let me try this again. Because I don't hear him. Hang on. There we go. I think I hear him, Peter.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Awesome. Finally.
Newfangled gadgets?
No, nothing is new. In fact, everything's very old and ornery, apparently. And so, just like I'm getting. And, I've got my Wi-Fi through Verizon MiFi hotspot that I can supposedly use anywhere in their network, which apparently is not here. and it doesn't have enough oomph to run everything I need to do the show by itself, and so I either need two of them or I need to do partial. And so I've had horrendous issues with the our home DSL and our Windstream, and all they say is, we're experiencing high usage in your area. And it doesn't fly, because I'm like, this town has 502 people.
Yeah, and they're all online at the same time, right?
Yeah, right. When half of them I know don't even have a computer. So give me a break. So I'm very perturbed with Verizon and Windstream, but nonetheless, we're doing what we can. I think next time I'm going to basically get two soup cans and a string and mail it to you, and we'll broadcast that way. Sure, it can't be any worse than what we have now, but I'm actively working on updating everything, the website and the show and new schedule for the show and all this stuff, but it can be very frustrating. But nonetheless, you're here, I'm here, we're glad you're here. I think we can all hear you. You're sounding pretty good and pretty loud, so that works.
Yeah, I put my mic up closer to my face so we can
it's down
hear
there,
better.
Down there around the tonsils, I guess. So so that works. Yep, we can hear you now. So let's get on with the topics for today.
not necessarily change, but I want to add something to it and start off on a little bit different subject that I've encountered here pretty much overnight in the last day and a half anyway. And I think it warrants bringing to the forefront here, because from my perspective as a poultry biologist, it is an important issue. and that is vaccination. As you know, I don't forcefully say that people should vaccinate. I think you vaccinate for what's endemic in your area, the problems that are in your area. For instance, if you're in an area with a load of mosquitoes, it might be smart to vaccinate for pox. If you're in an area that's very, very dry, such as maybe Arizona, where they may not see the mosquitoes, you may not consider doing that at all. So I think all of these things, they have their place, and then others, you invite trouble in. And so I want to speak to that just a little bit here this morning, or this afternoon now, so that people can get a better handle on it. There is a post on Facebook later that I will be responding to at great length. I didn't feel so well Saturday night into Sunday, so I didn't do a whole lot of responding to a whole lot of stuff, but it warrants talking about, and that is when you are either enticed by a vendor or enticed by a post on a website, whether it be Facebook or any other, to consider vaccination for a particular disease, in my opinion, it would behoove you to find out all you can from the experts rather than from the people who think they know something about something, and so much misinformation. Yeah, and I hate to put it out that way because I don't think most people do it deliberately. Certainly what works for one individual may not work for the other. But two things came to light in this particular posting on Facebook, and I thought that the audience here would benefit from it. Now, all of these diseases that we're going to talk about, there are three of them: Newcastle, bronchitis, and infectious bursal disease. And we're not going to go through them in detail. I'm going to outline roughly what they are, what they do, and whether you should or shouldn't consider vaccinating for them. So let me start, because this one threw me for a loop. I was really taken back by this one, and that's the infectious bursal. We talked about it probably about a year ago. I went into great detail about the immune system, and I took you through the battle of the special forces and stuff. That's how I presented it, if my memory serves me correctly. One force against another, the good versus evil, so on. And explained, the immune system, because that's what the bursal vaccine does. It protects the bird's immune system, for the most part, from an attack by the Gumboro virus or infectious bursal disease virus, one and the same, okay? But the problem I have with that, this is not a vaccine that backyard folks should be playing around with, period. It's cut and dried. This comes from a person who is a vaccination type person. I believe in it, but not in this instance whatsoever for small backyard holders, small flock holders, and that type of thing. If you are in a commercial setting and you are surrounded by other commercial flocks, such as, you may be here. I'm in the hotbed of Gumboro disease here. I'm 30 miles from where the disease was first discovered back in the 60s. Back then it was thought to be a kidney disease rather than a bursal immune system syndrome virus. But that being said, most of the people that I know here, as a matter of fact, all of the people that I know here in a backyard setting, the people that are in my club up here in the Harrington area, none of them vaccinate for this. None. Not one. And part of the reason for it is if you don't have it, you don't invite it on. This is a virus that once you invite it on your place, you're stuck with it. There's no getting away from it. The birds shed it all the time. Sometimes some of the vaccines, unless you know what you're doing with the vaccines, for ease of conversation here, I'll describe them as coming in all different strengths, okay? That makes it a lot easier for people to understand, strong versus weak. The original virus that started out was what they called the Lukacs strain, which was an extremely mild. The idea behind it was to get in and to build some antibodies to the Gumboro virus without damaging the bursa. Okay, that's where it where the virus settles down. Okay, in the bursa fibrosis, which is under the oil gland at the very tail end of the bird's intestine, so keeping that in mind, our idea is not to damage this organ, because this organ is where all of the B and T cells, basically for the immune system, are produced. If the organ becomes severely damaged, then we have poor quality or very little to none of the B and T cells that are required for the immune system being produced. So to be very careful in how we do that in a backyard setting, I don't know how you would do that without some real expert advice. And I don't know even why you would do it if you did not have the problem, because you certainly would be inviting Pandora's box onto your place over a period of time. Every bird you bring in is going to be exposed to it in some way, shape, form, or another. If you're bringing in older birds, it's not going to be a big deal, because by the time the birds are about 14 weeks of age, right in that age bracket, if they're exposed, there's probably not going to be any big deal, because the bursa will dissipate and shrink up and go away to nothing because it's no longer needed. And so prior to that, certainly from day one on up, exposure is extremely detrimental to the bird's health. This disease, while it is not a human disease, is very similar in its action and what it does to AIDS in human beings. Okay? It's not related. You can't get it from the vaccine and all that stuff. It's not a human virus, but it is an immune deficiency syndrome virus. And birds who are not protected and then are exposed to it usually don't do very well and end up being sick all the time and that kind of stuff. So I saw this on this particular post, and I know the company that the person was talking about, and they were talking to a person there who evidently thinks they know a lot about it, and they may on the commercial side. But this vaccine, in my opinion, has no business, none whatsoever, in a backyard, small flock holder setting whatsoever. It is dangerous. The vaccines come in many different strengths. I just don't know how you would do that without testing. The way they do it here is they make sure that the breeding stock is highly primed with this stuff by using multiple vaccinations of the breeding stock when they're young, and coming back and topping that off with a inactivated killed vaccine to get some longevity of the antibodies, because that's how that system works. So that those maternal antibodies are passed on to those chicks. They know here when those antibodies are going to be depleted or becoming less. For instance, if you had a high maternal antibody level one day through seven, they know that by the time 14 days comes around, these birds are going to be susceptible, and it's in that window of opportunities that they're going to vaccinate to prevent the birds from becoming naturally exposed to it. But that's for a lot of work, a lot of time, effort, and money, and you certainly wouldn't do it in any, willy-nilly in a backyard setting. I just can't see it whatsoever. I would never recommend somebody do that unless they could, don't have to prove to me, but unless they could say to me, that everybody around them is having a problem, or an extension agent strongly suggests because of problems they've had in the area or something like that. So when this information gets out there and people start reading it, I don't sell it. I don't sell it. Sold it years ago because there were some issues in certain areas of the country with game chickens that required it, but mm-hmm. I no longer sell it. It's something that people do not understand, and it is very difficult to try to make people understand it. And so in that kind of a setting, it has no place. I don't recommend that anybody even consider using it unless there are parameters that are requiring them to do so. And it's just a nasty, nasty virus that you don't need, and you certainly don't want to invite the vaccine strains on, because they stay forever, and the whole place gets seeded down with it, and you'll never get rid of it. And some of these vaccines have a tendency to recycle themselves, and therein lies some of the problems. Now, I don't know that to be 100% true with the Gumboro virus, but I will tell you this. The original virus that they started out with is no longer valid as a vaccine. It's been changed. InterVet had one they made. D78 was a clone. Everybody's got their own little version of it, and the poultry companies will pick from those for the ones that would fit their scenario. But that's only after, you know, analyzing what's out there and the different strains of the virus as well. There are different ones shooting up now. Remember when we talked about viruses, we talked about a virus population not being pure,
mm-hmm.
okay? And then there were always, you know, the little guys down at the bottom of the pile that the big guys that are at the top are holding down. So now you hold the big guy in check, and the little guy starts to rise to the top, and therein, you know, lies the problem. You know, now you got something else, and if it's different enough from the original virus, now you got something that the vaccines don't control either. So, not to beat this thing to death, but I think it's extremely important that people be cognizant of what they're doing. And just because you heard it on a forum somewhere, or you saw it on Facebook, or somebody is trying to sell you a particular vaccine for a particular problem, I would do my homework and then some before I even decided about using it. Know the ramifications. Know the rhyme and reason why you're using it. There are a lot of folks, I wouldn't say a lot, there are some folks that are paranoid about having their birds get sick in any way, shape, or form. And that, in one sense, is a good thing, but I think on the other side is a little bit unhealthy because it then makes you susceptible to all of these things that people say and makes you run off and say, well, that person said it, so therefore it must be okay. They wouldn't say it if it wasn't okay. Well, you don't know what, yeah, you know, we've all been down that road, and I'm not trying to belittle anybody. That's not my intent here. You know that people are going to do what they want to do, and you know, more power to you. You know, I've been down the road with Merrick's vaccination so many times that, look, they're not my birds. They're your birds. You take care of them as you see fit. You want to vaccinate, you vaccinate. You don't want to vaccinate, don't vaccinate. It's no skin off my nose one way or another. All I'm trying to do is put out the correct information so you can make an informed decision that will benefit you rather than hinder you. And so enough said about that one. To me, it's a dangerous vaccine for people in this setting to use. And again, I would never, ever suggest that people use it
mm-hmm.
without having, you know, the proper checks and balances in place and a good reason for using it. Look, most of the people in my club don't even vaccinate for LT, and LT is as prevalent here as flies on a horse.
Mm-hmm,
I mean,
right.
You know, the commercial poultry industry here watches it very closely. Now, they've stopped vaccinating years ago every bird that they put out there because of numerous reasons. Number one, it's costly. Number two, it saps their performance. So if you're vaccinating a flock just to protect them in 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 weeks, they couldn't see the dollar and cents in it, the cost of sending crews out to do it, the whole bit. So what they do now is they have the entire area where birds are grown here, which is everywhere and anywhere, on a grid. And when a flock breaks in that particular grid, nobody enters the grid. The birds are grown out as long as the mortality isn't too high. Then they move them, and then they vaccinate everything within about a mile or so of that grid, and that's it. And that usually stops it. You know, they're on it. You know, and in a backyard setting, you're not on it like that. You know, if I had a nickel for every time somebody said I thought they just had a cold, which irks my butt. well, it does because I've been espousing, you know, the thing is it's not just a cold. Get the bucket out, watch, and see, and you'll see what's going on in that flock. You really, really need to pay attention to doing that. So not to beat this one to death anymore, I'll move on to the second group, and
okay.
Because the original question on this thing had to deal with, and I'll just paraphrase it as best as I can remember it, but it went something like this, vaccinating for Marex and at the present time, and then was considering or wanting to vaccinate for Newcastle bronchitis, and that read somewhere that vaccinating for Marex can lead to Newcastle bronchitis. Hooey, hogwash, nonsense, bullcrap, whatever you want to call it, that ain't going to happen. That's just not going to happen. You don't catch a cold unless you're exposed to it. Well, you don't get Newcastle bronchitis unless you're exposed to it either. So just because you vaccinate for one thing does not mean that you're going to have any greater exposure at all to the other. As a matter of fact, if you're vaccinating for Marex, you are doing yourself a favor in another respect, because it is also an immune deficiency syndrome virus, nowhere near as bad as the infectious bursal disease vaccine, okay? But in and of itself, it can cause immune depression. So, but it's not its primary function as a disease. It's more of a crippling thing, and in the process, just happens to lower their ability as far as their immune system is concerned, function wise. But so one does not beget the other. So then we get to the question of should we vaccinate for Newcastle bronchitis? Well, over the years, I've watched it, and I've watched it, and I've watched it, and I've sold it, and sold it, and sold it. And I can't remember how long ago it has been now, but it's got to be at least 7 years or so in that range, give or take, that I stopped selling the Newcastle bronchitis vaccines, and I stopped selling the Newcastle vaccine. The reason for this is that, number one, these are live vaccines. Number two, unless you need them for a specific reason. Now, there are people who ship birds internationally, and it's in some countries it's required that birds be vaccinated prior to being shipped into those countries, and I think they want to vaccinate at least 30 days before they're shipped. So there is a genuine need in some places, but the majority of people do not need this vaccine, either one of them, either in combination as Newcastle bronchitis or singly as Newcastle and or bronchitis, because it comes either way. So why am I saying this? You know, here's a guy who sells this stuff. This is what your gig is. You know, sell it, make a buck. Now, you know, that's not what I'm about. Are the vaccines effective? Yeah, they're effective in areas where this is a problem. Here again, don't invite the problem in if you don't have the problem. These vaccines are very volatile, okay, especially in the backyard setting. Let me give you a little scenario here. You decide today that you're going to vaccinate for Newcastle bronchitis. You heard it somewhere, wherever. It doesn't really matter, okay? So you get your vaccine, and you start vaccinating your birds. And vaccination looks successful. Everybody didn't die, because they're generally not going to die from giving this vaccine up front. But they may when they start to have a reaction to it in 7 to 10 to 14 days. If not, they may get really sick, and again, they may not. But the other problem with this vaccine that is even more important is that these have a tendency to continue to cycle through a flock. So your birds don't have much of a reaction, everything looks fat, dumb, and happy, and all of a sudden, a month or two, 3 months down the road, here you've got a flock of birds you don't understand. They're glassy-eyed, they're watery-eyed, you haven't brought anything new in, and, you know, you pretty much don't have too many wild birds flying around your place for whatever the reason. You've got the perfect scenario, but you've still got sick birds. They're more than likely sick from the rolling reaction of the vaccine that has a tendency to do that. And I've dealt with it more times than you can shake a stick at. And I decided, along with some consultation with my good friend here, Dan Batista, you know, that this was not a good thing for the backyard small flock holder setting. It's just not going to work. And one of the reasons it's not going to work is because which vaccine are you going to pick?
Yeah.
Okay, because the Newcastle bronchitis comes in several different varieties. You know, off the top of my head, you know, from a Newcastle standpoint, you basically have your Newcastle B1, which is basically your mildest one, and the second one they usually use is a some people call it a B1 Lasota, but a Lasota, which is a much more virulent strain of Newcastle. As far as your bronchitis is concerned, you know, there's a Massachusetts, there's a Connecticut, there's a Arkansas, there's a JMK, there's a JMK 99, there's a whole slew of them. There's an Iowa. Now, some of these cross-protect, but none of them basically are going to cross-protect 100%. But still in all, the idea here is why invite this into your home, so to speak, and cause yourself grief that really can't be fixed. because it's a virus, so you have to wait for this reaction to stop. Okay, you
right.
may or may not have mortality. You certainly will have glassy eyes, snotty noses, maybe snicking, snorting, birds that just don't look very good, unthrifty. May not stop eating totally, but start to lose weight because they're not eating, not drinking, just miserable. And you're making them miserable. You did it. You spent your money to make your birds miserable. So I don't recommend Newcastle bronchitis, again, in any way, shape, or form. Now, here's the other kicker to it. Suppose you vaccinate with a B1, B1 Massachusetts or a B1, B1 MassCon. Those would be at the lower end of the spectrum as far as virulence is concerned, which would be strength in the layperson's term. So you're using the mildest form basically available to you, and you give it to them, and there isn't any reaction. Okay. Doesn't happen in every flock, but it happens in enough of them, okay? So you give your birds the vaccine, and you think you're protected. Well, here we go again. Unless these birds are exposed again at some point in time, the immune system is going to stop building antibodies to it because there is no need. If we're not seeing the Newcastle, if we're not seeing the bronchitis in the field sense, or what we call a field strain of this, then what we're going to have is birds that are going to slowly have their antibody levels dissipate until they are extremely low.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? When they're at extremely low and then they are exposed, it's going to take a lot more time for the immune system to respond, and more than likely you're going to have a field outbreak of Newcastle bronchitis. And then you're going to say to yourself,
mm-hmm,
well,
mm-hmm.
How could this happen? I vaccinated. Here's the clue that you don't hear on any of these other sites and other people. When you call Jeffers and you order a Newcastle bronchitis vaccine, you're not going to get this information. But here's what the problem is. Unless you are vaccinating your birds with a live Newcastle bronchitis every 90 to 120 days, you might as well save your money because it's a waste of time. For what I just said, as those antibodies wear off, okay, and the bird, even if the bird never sees it again, by the time it gets out to 4 or 5 months out, that bird is about as wide open as the day you first vaccinated it. So there's no point in doing it unless you're going to do it on a regular basis. So let's go with another scenario here.
Quick question before I forget.
Sure.
The chat room,
right.
and scrolling up before I forget it.
And I
don't think there is. Do any of the large poultry shows require any vaccinations in order to be entered? I think they just test for Salmonella pylorum, and that's it. When you go in, they just prick and blood test and swirl it on the card, and then you're done. But there's nobody that you know requires any vaccinated birds or anything like that, right?
There are a couple of states that require a couple of things, but they don't enforce it. It's up to
okay.
the club. It's up to the club to enforce it. Now, the NPIP pylorum test, that is enforced, okay?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And if you're from out of state, you usually have a certificate that has mm-hmm. a leg band number on it, and you show the bird. And most people don't do that. What they do is mm-hmm. they show that you've got the certificate, you bring a copy with you, you give it to the show secretary, or you send it in with your entry fees, and that's done. I know that Pennsylvania requires laryngotracheitis to be done. And not to get too far off topic here, but herein lies the problem. We know that all LT vaccines, that's what it's called for short, are not created equal. We know some of the vaccines that are available, okay, are real troublemakers. And those are the ones that are what we call chick embryo versus those that are tissue culture. The tissue culture, much milder, less protective up front. Okay, they usually definitely require a second dose, which most people don't do because it's costly in their eyes. I go back and I say to you, as I've said many, many times on the show before, dead birds don't pay bills.
Yep.
Okay? I have a very good friend of mine who had called me here not too long ago, and I was out of town and wasn't able in position to view his birds. I've helped him in the past. He's a real great guy. 99% of the time, willing to do everything good, vaccinates for Merrick's, vaccinates for LT. Okay, his choice. You know, I helped him clean up a flock birds from mycoplasma, a long, drawn-out, very expensive deal, but done it and still maintaining it now for over 2 years. Very happy with that situation. And but anyway, he had a flock, a small group of birds, that went down in their legs, just, you know, wasn't able to figure it out. And this particular individual, like I said, vaccinates for Merrick's, but also cuts the vaccine. And I understand that too. You know, I'm not stupid. I understand dollars and cents, and I understand where people go. And if you're hatching small groups of birds every, twice a week or something like that, it's tough to open a $20 bottle of vaccine and, you know, use it on 20 birds and throw the balance away. I get it. But the idea comes to mind here. If you take the little wafer and you're cutting it into quarters, and some people cut it into eighths, and I know other people that do even more than that, how do you know that when that freeze-dried, when the liquid was taken out of that, in that freeze-dried chamber that they put it into, okay, mm-hmm. how do you know that all of the virus is equally balanced in that wafer? How do you know that? Well, you don't. So you may take a quarter of it and have a load of what we call PFUs, plaque-forming units, okay? And you may take another quarter of it, and you may have minimal plaque-forming units. The birds that got the large dose of plaque-forming units are going to be well protected. The birds that got the minimal might not be so. And I had the occasion to visit with him yesterday for a few minutes, and we discussed his situation. He ended up putting the birds down. And there weren't a ton of birds in that particular group, but, you know, you had to put 20 birds down. And, you know, so then you look at 20 birds, you look at the time, the feed. You know, the money for the vaccination, you know, the whole bit. And I said to him, I said, look, you know, I said, I know you all cut it. I said, I know what you do. You know, I said, and I'm okay with it. I said, but, you know, maybe on particular birds that you know that you've had problems, he's a large fowl and he's had problems with them before, I said, maybe you cut it in half instead of quartering it. Okay, so it costs you $10 to vaccinate that particular group. I said, but the 20 you put down, what'd they cost you? You say, And you know, therein lies the, you know, reasonableness. That's all. You know, I get it. I get it about the, you know, the, and, you know, look, people keep saying, well, when are they going to make one that's in smaller doses? They're not. You'll be lucky to have this vaccine in 2, 3, 4 years, because the amount of people that are using it, other than, you know, small flock holders and backyarders, are very small comparatively. And we're down to one manufacturer now, where before we had 2, 3, 4, 5, and they're just not, you know, they're too busy making vaccines that are different than this for the commercial poultry industry. Okay, so, you know, on that note. Newcastle bronchitis, only if you need it. Investigate it thoroughly. Know what you're doing beforehand, okay? I mean, this can cause a crisis like you've never seen before. And I do not sell the vaccines even to get them for somebody that wanted it. They all come in a 10-pack. You'd have to buy 10 bottles to get one. And, you know, most of the time it's not feasible. Now, if you had a bona fide case of either Newcastle or bronchitis in your flock, and you were advised to do so, to vaccinate, okay, there is a real good methodology for doing so, and that is a one-time vaccination with a live vaccine, okay, and you would wait about 6 weeks and then come back with one dose of a killed, inactivated Newcastle bronchitis, and that will give you protection for pretty close to a year before you'd have to do it again. And that, in my opinion, is the only way I would consider a Newcastle bronchitis program of any kind. You do not want to get involved in getting all these what I call wacko strains, the Arkansas 99, the JMK, all these others. Those are vaccines that are used predominantly in the commercial broiler industry where those are problems. And if they have to vaccinate, they don't have a choice. And they have their problems because I know people come to me all the time. wanting me to help them, and I have pretty much given up on helping them because I don't want they're really not supposed to go outside of the poultry company that owns those birds and do things. So, but they have a lot of problems with the vaccines themselves. And look, if they didn't have these problems, they wouldn't be going to do to vaccinating birds in the egg before they hatch. Okay? I mean, it just is a huge problem and always has mm-hmm. been a problem. Mm-hmm. And they still continue to have problems with the rolling reactions. And if the thing about it with their birds is they get so morbid, stand around, they look like they got coccidiosis, they're droopy winged, they don't want to move, and you know what they do? They won't even go up to the feeders and the drinkers. They all hang out on the outside walls, and these poultry farmers have to walk these houses constantly to keep them off the sidewall and push them towards the food. That's how bad it is, okay? So, I mean, you know, when they get a reaction, and they get them... They get them more often than they'd like to have it, but it's just one of those things that I for one just you know that's my take on it. Both of these things are trouble, and I would not in any way, shape, or form consider vaccinating for any one of those three unless I was forced to do so and had a darn good reason to do it. Okay. I just wouldn't do it. It's mm-hmm. trouble. You're asking for trouble, and it just isn't any other way around it. And it, you know, if you must vaccinate again for the Newcastle bronchitis, not to be too redundant about it, but you need to stay on top of that in the way that I talked to you about. Now, one thing before we're coming to the top of the hour or close to it,
right.
I want to put out something here. Over the years. In my schooling and in the folks that I've been lucky enough to rub elbows with, I've gathered a lot of the knowledge that I have. And as far as Marek's disease is concerned, there's always this thing out here, you vaccinate for Marek's, you get Marek's. So I thought here the other day, this was back on the 26th of June, I have had the opportunity to make another contact with a real knowledgeable person. He is a chief medical officer for the Department of Agriculture Avian Oncology Unit, East Lansing, Michigan. So we were talking about, yeah, he's a real good guy. Here's the thing, you forget how old you are. Two of my contacts, one died and the other is retired. So, the other guy, Hiram Lasher, Hiram is probably one of the most brilliant individuals that I ever came across as a poultry veterinarian, and he passed last October at ripe old age of about 92. And then Dick Witter, who was the head honcho out there in East Lansing, he retired last year as well. So it kind of left me high and dry with a direct line and through some other contacts because we were dealing with, I was dealing with that osteopetrosis thing, and sometimes it's better to get it from the horse's mouth. I've been espousing all these things, but sometimes people look at it, and feel that I've got some sort of axe to grind because I sell the vaccine. I look at it this way. I have it. If you want it, buy it. If you don't, don't. But I posed this question to him, and I'll read to you from this email. Andy, I'll send you this email later on. I meant to do it weekend, but then I just want you to see it for yourself. And so my opening line has nothing to do with what we're talking about, but I just was thanking him for helping me with this osteoporosis thing. So here's my question. I said, on another note, is it possible for the current cell-free, which HVT is, HVT, freeze-dried Marek's vaccine produced by Pfizer, to actually give the birds Marek's disease? I have often been told this is not possible. We've had several groups of birds begin to show Marek's symptoms after vaccination with this vaccine. Would you please render an opinion on this subject? And I sent that to him on the 25th. He responded mm-hmm. on the 26th. He says, thank you for your email. Herpes virus of turkeys, Marek's disease vaccine is a serotype 3 non-oncogenic strain of virus and will not I repeat, will not induce Marek's disease. For chickens to develop Marek's disease, they must be exposed to serotype 1, pathogenic virulent strain of virus. Protection of properly vaccinated chickens from Marek's disease depends on whether vaccinated chickens are exposed to mild, virulent, very virulent, or virulent, virulent plus strains of virus. So there you have it, not from my mouth, but right from the horse's mouth. The guy that eats, sleeps, and drinks it more than anybody. A tremendous individual, great person to talk to, extremely helpful, bent over backwards to called me on the phone. We talked on the phone for a while. I told him all about, you know, what I do, and very much interested in it, and trying to help as much as he could. So, so I made another contact, another person, who will from time to time be able to give us some great insight as to, some of the things that we want to know the real truth about. And, how these other birds get exposed, whether by vaccinating them, it just brings it to the forefront. I have no idea at this point in time, but I'm dealing with another person who didn't buy the vaccine from me, which doesn't make any difference, but had bought it after seeing some of the postings on Facebook and I guess other places, and decided to do it, and now ends up mm-hmm. having a problem. Let that person know that about that email as well, because when you say it and somebody else has had the problem, they don't understand how these things work. And I've known for many, many years that this can't be. I some of the people that worked, like Dr. Hiram Lasher Dr. John Donahoe and people like that, and Bruce Kalnick up at Cornell University, and I think Bruce is retired now too. So see, all these guys, that I knew, and one of the ways that I came to rub elbows with them when I did work in a commercial poultry industry, we would go to these different meetings. One of the most prestigious meetings in the world is held right here in Ocean City, Maryland, usually around in October. Well, I stopped going to it because I really didn't have the need anymore. Plus the expense of going out there and staying. I could come home every night, but by the time you get done rubbing elbows, it's 10, 11 o'clock at night, and you want to be out there early in the morning for all the different presentations, so I can get a copy of the presentation anytime I want, so I don't necessarily need to be there. So that's how you make contact with all these people. You may call them a friend, a colleague, or whatever you want to call them. It doesn't really matter, but there are people who, when you talk to them, you say, hey, if I need help, can I call on you? And they said, by all means. And, they're very, very helpful, most of these guys. So that's how these contacts were developed over the years, and as you age a little bit, some of them go by the boards. So anyway, if you want to take a break, we can do that. We'll come back and get back on topic.
That sounds like a plan. No worries. We'll go to break, and let me see if I can put you on hold here, if everything will cooperate. And we will. We've been talking with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. Great information. Hopefully you're taking notes. But if you haven't been, no worries. You can listen to the archive of the show in its entirety probably 15 minutes after we wrap it up. And you can go and listen to the archive and then take all your notes 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back right after this short break from our sponsors.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer. If you're in the market for a new incubator, then look no further than GQF. They have a great selection of tabletop and cabinet-style incubators at prices you can afford. I love my GQF Genesis Model 1588. It has a large picture window and an automatic thermostat, which makes for a better hatch every time. Go pick out your new incubator at GQFradio.com. That's GQFradio.com.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Introducing the Chicken Fountain, a new way to water your flock. The Chicken Fountain will change your life and keep your chickens healthier by providing clean, fresh water every time. No more daily cleaning of dirty chicken waterers. This semi-sealed system keeps every drop of water fresh and clean. Proudly made in the USA, the Chicken Fountain will provide your flock with fresh, clean water for years to come. To order your Chicken Fountain, visit chickenfountain.com. That's chickenfountain.com.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
How would you like a punch in the beak?
This looks like a job for
Super Chicken.
You get the super sauce. I'll don my super suit.
All right, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Let's see if we've got if we push the right button here. Peter, are you back with us?
I am.
All righty, good. The little thing's still spinning there in front of your name, so apparently but I had thought it sounded like you had come on the board. Let's see, we've got I'm going to let you finish up, and then we've had somebody that joined us in the chat room that has some sick chickens. They love some advice, so we'll let you finish up, and then we'll get to her questions, or his question.
I think what I think what we'll do to do all of the rest of this stuff justice is talk about the canker, because it's becoming more and more of a problem, and we can leave the strongyle worms for next week. And I'll come up with some other stuff, because it's all interesting stuff. But canker, we've been through before. On the show and what have you. But it's a valid point to bring up now, because we're seeing more and more and more of it. It is a protozoa that does not respond to sulfa drugs, amprolium, and that kind of stuff. So it is a special case type thing. The problem with it is, by the time you notice it, it's usually out of control in a particular bird, because you generally don't see it on the outside of the bird. And this is one of the reasons why, and I know it's hard for people to do when they have a lot of birds. You can't catch this one, that one, the other thing. But I'll tell you, a good time to get them is when they go to roost at night. And, whether you wear one of those little forehead headlight things, you've got them now with the LED lights on them. They're like high beams on your car. And, you can focus them pretty decent and look inside the bird's mouth and stuff. And it's not a bad idea, maybe once every, month, 6 weeks or whatever. you know, to take a look-see and see, because that's where you're going to see it as a general rule. We're starting to see this stuff be real nasty, and what I mean by that, growing quite a few different places that we're not necessarily used to. We know they can grow in those places, for instance, in the nasal cleft in the upper roof of the mouth, over into the nostril. We know it can grow in the infraorbital space between the eye and the eye socket and stuff like that, but we're seeing more of it. We're actually seeing a lot of that now, where it looks like you have a regular eye infection and you start, you know, medicating with the regular antibiotic-type drops and stuff, and you're not getting anywhere. There's a very good chance that, you know, that you could be dealing with canker. Trichomoniasis is what it's called. It's spelled Trichomoniasis. Again, it is a protozoa that causes this. In hawks and stuff, they call it frounce. I don't know why. I don't really care. It's just if you hear the term, somebody might say, oh, yeah, frounce, if they've ever been person who has dealt with hawks and doves and so on. That's what they call it there. And pigeons and chickens, we call it canker. And this is another emerging problem. And the bad side of it is that we're seeing more and more resistance to it because we don't really have that many drugs left to treat it. So one of the ways to keep this from spreading is it does spread readily through the water. And through the feed from contaminated birds. So, if I have it in my mouth, there's a good chance that I'm going to go over and take a drink of water, and then everybody that comes behind me is susceptible to picking it up. Now
I've got a million dollar question.
Yeah.
Would it make any sense? We may not have an iota of scientific information, but would having, for example, a nipple waterer versus, say, just a trough waterer where they dip their beak into, would that possibly reduce some of this if it's spreading that way?
Yeah, I would think that there would be less of it spread around that way. I would think that it would. I couldn't say without any scientific data. And, you know, somebody'd have to really run a good solid trial on that, you know, with controls and stuff. But, you know, just general knowledge, looking at, sure, because a bird is going to trigger the nipple and the water is going to flow out. So the chances of leaving enough organisms behind to cause infection, in my opinion, knowing how nipple drinkers work, probably fairly slim to none, in my opinion, and you know, certainly could be wrong, but yes, in my opinion, it would be. Putting oxine in the water, copper sulfate in the water would certainly help. I don't know about apple cider vinegar. Probably would help. Can't hurt, for sure. Okay? I know a lot of people are fans of the apple cider vinegar, and that's a good thing as well. So I would think that, you know, any of those kinds of things in the water on a regular basis is certainly going to help slow this thing down or help get rid of it. The other thing is I don't want everybody to run out and think they got to start doing all this stuff tomorrow. I think the biggest thing a person can do is check your flock, see if you've got the problem to start with. And, therein lies the pound of cure that you're going to get, because if you've got a problem, there's a couple of things you can do, okay? And if a bird has it severe enough, it might warrant euthanizing the bird, because once it really, really gets out of control, getting it under control is a huge problem. Okay, I have a client now that we've been dealing with it now for several weeks easily, and we are about rope's end trying to, I've got one more medication coming in for them to try to get this under control, and we think we're making headway, and that's a good thing. But there isn't much out there anymore compared to what we used to have. We used to have a small arsenal of stuff that worked very well. Herein lies the other problem. Pigeon folks are the biggest offenders, because this saps performance in a bird like nothing else you've ever seen, because this not only ends up growing in the mouth along the margins of the beak, under the tongue, on top of the tongue, over their airway, in the roof of the nasal cleft, in the eyes, in the nostrils, and all of this kind of stuff. And it adheres itself to the tissue. So when you attempt to take it off, you will end up with some bleeding in those particular areas. But this keeps birds from eating. So severe weight loss is usually a tip-off for this particular thing, or emaciation, what we call, where a bird is, skin and bone, and you can't figure it out. They don't seem to want to eat and everything else. And here's the other part of it. You can open the bird's mouth and take a quick look-see and not even see it, because unless you look all the way down the back of the throat, and even then you still may not see it. So if you've tried a whole lot of other things and they're not working, if you've tried some intestinal type things and the bird's still not responding, you may want to give a canker medicine a try. But we're running into the resistance because of the overuse of the medications on the pigeon side, basically, because they use it constantly, because it saps performance in racing pigeons. And once it gets a foothold in a loft, it's tough to get it out. So when birds get really, really bad, sometimes the end doesn't justify the means, because you'll pump a lot of money into it and they're going to die on you anyway. Once it gets out of control, because it grows right straight down the throat, right straight down into the crop, and once you get it in the crop, it starts working its way down through there, shutting down the proventriculus, and the bird just is not going to eat. There's a whole lot of things. I've been looking into all kinds of different reasons why birds don't eat, and that's one of them. I'm not saying that every bird that's stopped eating is for that particular reason. Sometimes it's the fact that they're not getting the proper nutrition to make the proper triggers to the hypothalamus and stuff to trigger the proventriculus to allow food to go through. A lot of that is controlled by thiamin. B12 helps sometimes as well. But, this is a nasty, nasty disease. Not necessarily easily controlled, but like I said about a whole bunch of other diseases and stuff that we've talked about over the years, the quicker you get on it, the quicker it's going to be over with, and the better chances of a positive outcome. Your free-flying birds can carry it. There really isn't too many birds that I know of, between chickens, pigeons, doves, hawks, all of those are capable of carrying it. Turkeys, you may even get it from wild turkeys. So while it may be cute to have wild turkeys running around amongst your flock of domesticated chickens, it may not be such a hot idea at the end of the day. I mean, nobody loves a beautiful wild turkey fanning itself out in the field more than I do, but there's a time and place for that as well. So if they're running around loose with your birds that are free-ranging, that's not such a hot idea. I don't know how you're going to prevent it with free-ranging birds, but it is a problem, or can present itself as a problem. But the easiest way of spread, again, contaminated feed and water. I kind of do like the nipple drinker idea. I certainly, if I had a problem, I would probably switch off to nipple drinkers. I don't think I'd run out and buy nipple drinkers if I didn't have the problem. I think I would have assessed my flock first and then make my decisions based on that kind of information. Just see where it goes from there. But some of the medications that were available for this were taken off the iproniazole, which was Iprepan, dimetrazole, which was Emtryl. They were considered carcinogens by the government and taken off the market 20-plus years ago, even more, maybe 25 years now. They were good and worked very, very well. If they were brought back now, probably would work fairly well, because they haven't been used in so many years. The other one is Ronazole, which is Ridzole. It's a pigeon product. The other one we use off the human side is Metronidazole, and that's about it. you know, you'll read using copper sulfate and all this kind of stuff, not going to happen. Might help keep it under control, keep it from spreading. But I, in my years of doing this, I have never, ever seen copper sulfate do squat as far as this is concerned. This is a disease that is very aggressive, left unchecked. It just grows wherever it damn well pleases and can cause mortality very quickly. You know, this flock that I'm talking about up north, they free-range their birds, and they have access to a free-running small stream or river that runs through the property. Getting any kind of water medication into the birds is an impossibility. I've suggested before that they, you know, put up a fence of some sort to keep the birds from getting down to the creek. They don't want to do that. So hence they continually deal with multiple problems in their flock of all kinds of descriptions, from worms to the canker situation, the whole nine yards. You know, I don't live there. I just advise them, and it seems like every week there's a different anomaly going on there. But if you're not going to do anything to you know, help mitigate the circumstances, then you got to, you know, you end up paying the price at the end of the day. And so, you know, they've got this problem, and it is extremely resistant. The metronidazole barely kept it in check. The Ridzol didn't do anything. The combination of using the Ridzol and the metronidazole together just did slightly better than either one of them by themselves. So we've got another product that we're using now. Can't even remember the name of it right off the top of my head. This is a something you got to put right directly on the oral lesions. I communicated with them this morning. Seem to be doing a little bit better on the combination of medications. It doesn't seem to be as cheesy and scabbed up as it was before. It seems to be still a lesion, but not as bad. And we were dosing that with iodine as well, helping to keep it in check. So it's a challenge. And this particular one has grown way down the back of the throat. And they've been good about at least getting as much of it as they can out. But when you do that, it bleeds at the same time. Not profusely, but it just still bleeds. And it's becomes a mess when you're trying to do all these things on a bird that's not very happy with you pulling crap out of its throat in the first place. So I just want people to be aware of it. I want them, you know, to be aware of what they can do to stave this off in your own flock. As little contact with outside birds, free-flying birds of any description as possible, especially pigeons. If you've got a pigeon population that's hanging around your place, I don't know exactly what you can do to get rid of them, but I would make every effort to do so, or at least limit their access to you know, the feed and the water that your birds consume. Free-flying birds, we all know the routine on that. They're everywhere and anywhere. How you stop that, that's in, you know, short of penning up birds in huge aviaries, which is not monetarily conducive to most people. You know, you're stuck with dealing with the aftermath of whatever the free-flying birds and the pigeons leave behind for your flock. So I would, you know, I would make sure that I didn't have the problem, and if I was in a position to either use the oxine on a fairly reasonable basis or any of the others, the copper sulfate. I'm not saying the copper sulfate isn't any good. I think it's good as a preventative, but I do not, I know for a fact that it just doesn't do anything once the disease has gotten a foothold. It's almost an impossibility trying to do it with copper sulfate. And, you know, if you decide you want to use copper sulfate in the drinking water, it's relatively inexpensive. About a quarter of a teaspoon per gallon should do it. The apple cider vinegar, most people know the dosage on that, but somewhere around 4 teaspoons or so is plenty. So that should do there. The you know, the metronidazole, depending on the size of the bird, we usually start out with 250 milligrams once or twice a day. The bird that we're dealing with up north is on a much higher dose of that plus the other. And that's the other thing. You know, you start reaching the outer limits of where you dare go You kill the bird with the medication versus let them die from the disease. So, you always run that risk as well. And they're aware of that. So, as long as they're aware of it up front, see where it goes. But, this is a disease we're starting to see, in my opinion, grow out of control a little bit more. Used to be confined pretty much right to the mouth, right to the back of the tongue. Right around the opening to the esophagus where you could see it readily, you could treat it, and you give it some metronidazole or one of those others, and it would go away, the Ridzol or something like that. But we're seeing it now where none of this stuff seems to be doing the job. The iodine is helpful in keeping it in check. And the way you would basically do that is you would take a tweezer, find the canker, gently work it off of the tissue that it's adhered to, take your iodine with a clean swab, stick the swab in the iodine, don't wring out the iodine off of the swab, and just swab the lesion that you've taken the canker material itself off of, and swab that pretty good over the top of that that lesion. Once, twice a day is sufficient, and keep up your canker medication, and keep up with either oxine, copper sulfate, or something like that, apple cider vinegar in the water, and hope that you can keep it under control, and maybe in some cases you'll be able to get it away. We don't even know where it came from. They're swearing they don't have any pigeons. I say if you got chickens, you got pigeons somewhere, sooner or later. And not saying they're not being truthful, but I know the area where they live, and I can't see why they shouldn't have them. But that's another story. But may even be free flying birds, and maybe a hawk or two around there. Who knows? The hawks are notorious for it. In pigeons, this is easily spread when the pigeons are feeding their young. As we know, pigeons produce milk to feed their young, and they pass it on to their young at a very early age that way. So that's how infection takes place. That's one of the reasons why they don't want it, over and above the fact that it saps the performance of the birds, when they're trying to fly. So just wanted to bring it to the forefront again. We're really seeing... I would say right now I'm seeing anywhere from 3 to 5 cases of this a week, where before if you saw a case a month or 2 months, it was a lot. So it's certainly on the rise, and I know of a couple of people that have that problem continually. They get it under control, seems to go away, and, 2 months down the road, we're back to it again. So first things first, evaluate your flock when you can. Go out and pick up everybody, look in the mouth. What you're going to be looking for is a yellow to orange, yellow-looking lesion in the mouth. Can be anywhere. Can be from anywhere at the edges and margins of the beak to the any piece of tissue inside the beak, the tongue, over the glottis. This bird up north was growing not only over the glottis as well, but it was growing all the way down the back of the throat. So anywhere there, the nasal cleft in the mouth, check the eyes, and just check your flock over. If you don't have it, don't sweat it. Just be aware that it's there, and these are what I call re-emerging diseases for whatever the reason. Maybe it's the weather conditions being what they are. I don't know. But certainly it is becoming more and more of a problem. Next week we'll talk about a little bit different worm than we've ever really talked about before. When we did a segment on worms, we talked about it briefly. We'll go a little bit more in depth about it. We're seeing more and more of it, and that's why I bring it to the forefront. We're not seeing an outbreak of it, but in some of the foreign countries, it is more of a problem than it is here. So we'll talk about that the next time around. So that we can start it off maybe with that if no other huge problems crop up between now and next Monday. So any questions?
Yeah, we've got a question. A young lady had called in, and she's got a question for you. She's got six sick chickens, so let's go ahead and bring her live here. Let's see from the chat room. It's an Ohio farmer's wife. I believe you are live on the show now, and give us your first name. Take it you're calling from Ohio, and then let Peter Brown know what your problem you've got.
Okay, my name is Barb.
I know
okay,
who
Barb.
You are.
Well, I figured I'd listen first and try to learn, but I'll talk to you later also.
Okay, sure. Sure. So So how can we help you right this second?
I'm desperate. Well, I have three lemon cuckoo Orpingtons who are 9 weeks old.
Okay.
And I hatched them.
Okay.
And they've been doing fine. And last week I had one chick that is lethargic, becoming emaciated, eyes squinty, just sits there and does nothing.
Okay. What have you done for them?
I gave them Corid because somebody said they might have coccidiitis.
Coccidiosis? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm new.
Well, that would have been my first choice. Usually lethargy, loss of weight, emaciation, standing up on one leg, falling asleep, standing up, sitting in the corner, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That is generally, you know, where we go with that as far as that's concerned. Now, let me ask a question. No respiratory issues, no snotty nose, swollen face?
Nothing. No wheezing, no mucus under the wings.
Okay.
No, I even looked in their mouth today, no
cool.
mucus in their mouth. Now, I have one that is also off balance, like just takes great big steps and flaps his wings. And he's eating, and he's not losing weight, and he's drinking, but kind of the same symptoms, but a little bit more. And now I have a third one that is just sitting there squinting.
What do the droppings look like, Barb?
Foamy, watery. I mean, the one that I can see.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of them are running around. I have like 36 chickens, and I have some that are a year old. I have some that are 3 weeks old. I have some that are 13 weeks old. Everybody else is fine.
Okay. Just this particular group?
Just these three.
Okay. Well, generally, the way I always look at this, and I've said this on the show before, so... there's basically, for the most part, only two places this can either be. It's either a respiratory issue or it's an intestinal gut issue. Feel very strongly here, in the absence of any respiratory issues, it has to be the other. So that's where we need to look at. The problem with Corid and the problem with Amprol, they're both one and the same. Corid is labeled for cattle, active ingredient Amprol. And Amprol is labeled for chickens, active ingredient Amprol, same strength, whether if you've got the powder, they're 20%. If you've got the liquid, they're 9.6% for either one. So it really doesn't matter using one versus the other. There are some people who swear by Corid, and I just have to laugh because it's the same thing. It's mind over matter. But at any rate, there may be some resistance there. It may be something else besides coccidiosis, but it certainly appears to me to be an intestinal gut issue. I would probably switch off to sulfadimethoxine, much more broad spectrum, should take care of coccidiosis and a whole host of other things that may or may not be
and
wrong.
And I have some of that, but you had told me when I spoke to you once before that those should not be used for laying hens, and my hens, these will all be laying hens.
Well, if they're not laying, you can use it.
Okay.
Okay. And we've been down that road a zillion times on this show.
Okay,
because it is an issue, and it's a very misunderstood issue, but there are no medications other than the Corid or the Amprol that can be used legally, and I use that tongue-in-cheek a little bit because they're your birds, you do as you see fit, and still eat the eggs. And that's because the government has never allowed medications to be used on birds producing eggs for human consumption, so therefore nobody has ever come out and done the work and published the work as part of their what's called an NADA license from the federal government.
Okay.
So if their NADA doesn't say it on it, they can't espouse it, even though they may know what that withdrawal time may be.
Okay.
Secondly, a lot of the medications that we use these days, we don't use them by the labeled directions because they don't work. They don't work unless you go to a higher dose, except for something like your sulfadimethoxine, which you would stay away from fooling around with dosage and go strictly by the book. And the reason for that is all sulfa drugs have a tendency or the propensity to do kidney damage if they're used improperly.
Okay.
Sulmet being the biggest offender of all of them. I know there are a zillion people out there saying, oh, that's nonsense. I've been using Sulmet for 20 years, and that's fine. And I'm not saying they should run out and switch to anything. All I'm saying is if you are cognizant of what the problem is when it appears on your doorstep, you'll know why.
Okay.
So I'm a big fan of not inviting things in to give you trouble. You got enough trouble some days. The last thing, don't we all? You know, so the last thing you need is sick birds caused by a medication that you paid your hard-earned money for. And so I mean, if Solmet were so great, then the commercial poultry industry would use it, and they very rarely use it, at least here. The drug of choice here for coccidiosis in commercial broilers is sulfadimethoxine, and they only use that when they've got a problem in a particular flock that their normal coccidiostats won't control, and that happens. So I think I would go ahead and put those birds on the sulfadimethoxine. You don't have to put the whole flock, just those three. Pen them up, put them on it. I don't believe in medicating birds that don't need it.
Okay.
I would put them on it run it for no more than 5 to 6 days. And, see where you stand. Now, any bird not eating, you're going to have to help them there. So it's either tube feed them or let them go. Survival of the fittest, and that's your call.
Okay.
But if you're going to tube feed them, it's very, very simple. It's not overly difficult. I'm not a big fan of feeding with a syringe versus a tube, because a tube will put it right down in the crop. The syringe has the option then, if the bird decides to breathe or whatever or shake its head, to load the mouth with liquid, and then they suffocate real quick.
Right.
Because once the liquid gets into the trachea, it is very hard and very difficult for them to get it out. Mm-hmm. It's like kind of like a one-way street. It goes down, but not much comes up. So you just take a piece of air pump tubing from an aquarium. You can get any mm-hmm. store that sells that kind of equipment. Take your syringe with you. Make sure it fits nice and tight on the end. Get yourself 2-3 feet of it. Come home. Measure on the outside of the bird from the crop up onto the lower beak, go out about 6-8 inches, whatever you feel comfortable with after the beak, cut it off. Before you do that, make a little mark where it ends at the beak,
mm-hmm.
so that when that'll give you a landmark for putting the tube down the bird's throat. A lot of people think, I'm going to get it in the airway. So before you even, try to put the tube in, just open the bird's mouth and look at directly behind the tongue and the floor of the mouth. You'll see the bird every time they go breathe. You'll see the glottis open up and close. You just want to stay away from there. You'll see it's pretty hard to get the tubing in there. You'd have to actually work at it to get it in there. So what you're going to do when you want to put the tube in is you're going to slide it for that big, giant black hole in the back of the mouth. That's the esophagus. That's where they eat, and you'll do no harm to them whatsoever there. Okay?
Okay.
You might want to coat the tubing with a little bit of any kind of cooking oil. It doesn't matter, just to make it easier so it doesn't catch on everything and goes down quicker.
Sure.
Okay. Now you got your tubing. You mix up a slurry of whatever you want to feed them. All it has to be is syringeable, so I really don't care what you use. If you want to use, I like a hard-boiled egg because everybody's got them. Take a hard-boiled egg, put it in a blender, put some warm water in there, put a quarter of a teaspoon of any vitamin electrolyte compound, some yogurt if you like. I really don't care. A piece of apple without the skin on it. Put it in the blender and puree it till it's really loose and syringeable. If you have to add a little bit more water, add warm water, not cold, and then pull that up in your syringe, then put on your tubing, fill your tube, refill your syringe so that your syringe and your tubing are full. Okay?
Gotcha.
Slide your tube down the bird's throat, that big giant black hole in the back, and then just slowly push the syringe in till you've got all of that in the crop. And you'll know when you know what a bird looks like when the crop's full. So
sure.
As that crop starts to expand, don't overdo it, because there's no mechanism to hold any of that liquid in the crop. It'll come right back up in the mouth. So, when you start to see it expand halfway decent, stop, pull out your tube, and you're done. About every 3 or 4 hours, because that's how long it'll take them to pass that through. And that'll keep them going, hopefully, till you get all this stuff straightened out.
Okay.
All right.
Sounds great.
All right. Probably no need to call later, but if you want to shoot me an email, let me know what your progress is, or if you've got a question or something, need me to call you, just say so.
Okay.
We'll
I will. Thank you so much. I appreciate
it. You're welcome.
All righty. Great question. Great answer. And we appreciate your calling in from Ohio. And we appreciate you being here today with us, Peter Brown, as always, every Monday. Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor and founder of FirstStateVetSupply.com. If they don't have it, you don't need it. That's my opinion, and I'm sticking to it. And always glad to help. And that is, of course, Peter Brown, the Chicken Doctor. Peter, thank you very much for joining us today, and we'll continue with the worms next week. That's perfectly fine. I love the information you shared earlier. And then, of course, part of our topic today regarding canker, and hopefully everybody can. If you missed any of it, of course, you can listen to the archive 24/7, blogtalkradio.com, and we hope you can tune in with us next Monday when Peter is due back. So, Peter, thank you so much for joining us. We hope you have a wonderful week.
You too, Andy. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Bye.
All right, that's going to wrap up another awesome show. And make sure you go visit Peter, www.firststatevetsupply.com. A lot of stuff that he talks about, hey, he carries, and or he can get for you. And so give him a call. Don't rely on a blog or a forum. We always say that. He even talked about that today on the radio show, some of the stuff, and I'll use the word stuff lightly, that people may see on blogs and forums. And so, again, that's just one thing we do here is we try to bring on folks that know what they're talking about to educate us on keeping our flocks healthy. It's that simple. It's not brain surgery. And so we're really glad you can join us. And we hope you'll tune in again tomorrow. The American Livestock Breeds Conservancy looks like Thursday. Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine. And, hey, hope you could join us. And in the meantime, chickenwhisperer.com. Join us on Facebook and Twitter. Until tomorrow, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, y'all have a wonderful afternoon, wonderful evening, and God bless everybody.
¶¶